Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, May 18, 2021. The governor of Central Equatoria State is appealing for humanitarian support for families affected by insecurity in and around Yei County.
They need to help us because we don't have shelter and blankets to cover ourselves, and we don't have food, and people are suffering.
And the transitional government in Sudan fires the country's chief justice.
The council shall approve the appointment of the chief justice, the Supreme Court judges, and the president and members of the Constitutional Court after their nomination by the High Judicial Council.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The governor of Central Equatoria State is appealing to aid agencies to provide humanitarian assistance to thousands of internally displaced persons in Yei and Lanya counties. Many families were displaced from their homes following recent attacks allegedly carried out by cattle keepers and rebels of the National Salvation Front. For VOA News, Daniel Martin Friday reports from Yei.
Aid agencies say over the past several weeks, more than 3,000 villagers fled their homes in Lanya County's Wuji Payam following attacks by cattle keepers suspected of being from Trekeka County. Another 3,000 people were displaced from their villages as a result of clashes between National Salvation Front rebels and government forces in Yei's Otogo Payam last month. Edina Ross, an IDP from Ombasi Village, is sheltering at the Episcopal Church compound in Yei Town. Ross says an aid agency gave her a two-week food ration when she arrived 2 weeks ago, but since then, obtaining food and non-food items has been a challenge.
They need to help us because we don't have shelter and blankets to cover ourselves, and we don't have food, and people are suffering. And I don't feel happy because of the bad things done to us in the bush.
Paul Lukadi, another IDP who fled his home in Wuji Payam of Lanya County last week, tells South Sudan in Focus that more than 3,000 IDPs camping in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Mundo Diocese lack basic necessities.
The IDPs here lack food, clean water, tents, and medicines for the children. And we are also lacking cooking utensils and other non-food items.
Central Equatoria State Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony was on the ground for the past few days to assess the humanitarian and security needs of the IDPs in Yei and Lanya counties. Governor Adil says the state has provided some food items to the IDPs through the government's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, but the need for humanitarian aid is overwhelming.
We call for assistance for the IDPs because mostly these are vulnerable people, children and elderly, who are also in dire need of humanitarian assistance. Therefore, we are calling upon the humanitarian actors, together with us in government, to give humanitarian assistance to these internally displaced persons. Therefore, they need shelter, food, and other essential basic services.
Justice Lugala, Executive Director of the South Sudan Health Association, a humanitarian group that provides health services in the two counties, says health workers need security and protection or they cannot do their job.
The insecurity that is existing now, we find it very difficult now to move. The first thing is honestly to address the security situation on the ground. For example, which things were looted, working whatever tools and the medicines that they were having were looted. So these are the kind of things that are bringing us problems in terms of the implementation. Whether it is emergency, whether it is helping IDPs, where the people are cared like that, they need some kind of reassurance that they can go back to give service to without fear.
Mohamed Sion, head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA in Yei, says efforts are underway to assess the humanitarian needs of thousands of IDPs in Yei and Lanya counties.
The humanitarian partners are planning to respond both by conducting assessment to form the basis for response, but at the same time, we have some of the partners who are planning to move in to provide response as quickly as possible.
Sion says a recent wave of insecurity in the Greater Yei area has affected the operations of humanitarian organizations on the ground. Adil says the government will ensure the protection of aid workers operating in the state.
We as a government of the state, after assessing the security situation, we resolve that all the cattle keepers that are in Greater Lanya area has to move back to the places of origin within 3 days. We as a government of the state, we are committed to the cessation of hostility, respect to the ceasefire, and equally, we call upon the international community and the agencies to investigate the actions that NAS is in inflicting on the civil population by displacing them, looting their properties in all the villages.
Even though rebel groups signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in December 2019, residents and observers say the Greater Yei region, which includes Yei River, Lanya, Morob, and Kajokeji counties, still remains a battlefield between government forces and National Salvation Front rebels. For VOA News, I am Daniel Fred Martin in Yei Town.
The Sudanese Sovereign Council has fired the country's Chief Justice and accepted the resignation of the Attorney General on Monday. Leaders on the Sovereign Council did not explain reasons for the shakeup at the country's top judiciary leadership. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Mohamed Al-Faki Suleiman, a spokesperson for the Sudanese Sovereign Council, made the announcement during a press briefing shortly after the regular meeting of the council in Khartoum last night. Suleiman said the Sovereign Council had relieved Chief Justice Neymat Abdullah Mohamed Khair from her position as Chief Justice, but gave no reason for doing so. Suleiman further said the Chief Justice position will remain vacant until the council appoints a replacement in accordance with the constitution.
The council shall approve the appointment of the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court judges, and the President and members of the Constitutional Court after their nomination by the High Judicial Council. Until the High Judicial Council is formed, the Sovereign Council shall appoint the Chief Justice. The same thing applies to the Attorney General.
Judge Neymat Abdullah Mohamed Khair was appointed Sudan's first female Chief Justice in October 2019 after the Sudanese military removed former President Omar al-Bashir from power in April of the same year following months of mass pro-democracy protest. Judge Mohamed Khair was not immediately available for comment. At the same briefing, the Sovereign Council had accepted the resignation of Attorney General Tajasir al-Hibir, noting al-Hibir had indicated he wanted to step down on at least 3 different occasions. Al-Hibir tells South Sudan in Focus he resigned because he thinks he has not been given enough space to work independently. He says more than 20 well-qualified public prosecutors were relieved from their post earlier this month by a government committee tasked with removing elements of former President Omar al-Bashir's administration and recovering stolen funds. Even though he wanted to leave the job, Al-Hibir says the panel did not speak with him before making their decision.
It's a matter of independence of the Attorney General Office. In terms of intervention from the other unauthorized institutions, government agencies to terminate the tenure of office of the prosecutors and chief prosecutors, or whom I think it's not fair because it's in violation of a law that applies to these institutions.
Al-Hibir says he resigned due to interference from certain government agencies in the public prosecutor's office, which he says is a clear violation of the law and compromises the judiciary's independence.
There are so many conflicts which took place due down the road to work out. If you cannot do justice to your own people, then you will not be able to do justice for the others. And even if it is not accepted, I would have stayed at home.
Sudanese journalist and political analyst Muhammad Ali Fazari, who works as editor-in-chief of the online English newspaper Khartoum Today, says he is not surprised to see both Chief Justice Mohamed Khair and Attorney General Al-Hibir forced out of their jobs. Fazari says many families of the victims of the military's crackdown on the Sudanese revolution believe the two officials have failed to bring justice for their loved ones.
Justice is one of the three pillars of the slogan of the Sudanese revolution, has stumbled and faces a number of challenges due to the delay of main cases. There are so many criminal and suspect still at large. That's why it motivates people to think that there is still some way to go to achieve a comprehensive justice in Sudan.
Fazari insists both Al-Hibir and Muhammad Khair have demonstrated a lack of seriousness in bringing justice to the victims of Sudanese revolution. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Uganda, where Uganda's refugee population has reported no cases of COVID-19. In Bidibidi settlement, Yumbe district, the refugee leaders are working tirelessly to maintain the status quo. For VOA News, Alima Thumani reports from Yumbe in northern Uganda.
In Bangatuti village, Bidibidi settlement, four Refugee Welfare Council members meet to discuss the awareness message to the community. When COVID-19 broke out in Uganda in March 2020, the Ugandan government quickly shut its door to new refugees, including those from South Sudan, to curb the spread of the disease caused by the coronavirus. According to the Johns Hopkins University, Uganda currently has more than 42,600 confirmed infections and 347 deaths. Data Kenyi, a Refugee Welfare Council member, says since then, the refugees have been closely monitored.
Tell them to observe the social distancing, hand washing. Them say just the SOPs put in place. There's no high rate infection in the settlement. Whoever came new has to go for 14 days quarantine. From there, then we join the community and be safe.
In the Ugandan refugee settlements, the markets, schools and health centers that are in zones closer to the local community are open to both refugees and locals. This can be a catalyst for the spread of COVID-19 if the refugees are not checked. Uganda has prioritized frontline health workers for the vaccine that is being administered around the country. At Abirimajio Market, which is open to refugees, Neva Rukia says she has heard on radio about people getting vaccinated and is wondering when they will be considered. She says they say that if you have not attained the age of 50, you won't get vaccinated. She also says, I'm 32 years and they say I don't qualify for the vaccination. Am I not at risk of being infected? On Sunday, under grass thatched mud and water church, more than 100 members of a Protestant church congregation sat attentively, listening to the priest. Many of them were women and children, some with masks and others without. Esther Luma, the church lay reader, explains the challenges facing the community. The church leader is a refugee and the congregation consists of all refugees.
We don't have money for buying this sanitizer and the masks. Yeah, because the church is having no budget. Even the facility for washing hands is also difficult for us to get.
Uganda is home to 1.4 million refugees. UN partners such as the UN High Commissioner for Refugees say they will continue to urge Uganda to reopen its borders, but this may not happen until the East African country builds adequate capacity to test and quarantine new variants of the coronavirus. Halima Athmani for VA News, Yumbe District, Northern Uganda.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how are health experts handling tropical diseases during the COVID-19 pandemic? That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
Name something that you haven't tried, but hope to someday.
I never drive a car, but I hoped to, because I've grown in a poor background, and in my life, I desire to do so.
I want to travel from Uganda to a different country because I've never moved out of Uganda. Yes.
I've never tried bungee jumping, but I would like to try it one time.
I've not tried paragliding before, but I would like to try it someday, being at the top of the mountain, jumping and flying the sky like a bird.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we'll look at how health workers are handling tropical diseases during the COVID-19 pandemic. The World Health Organization reports the COVID-19 pandemic has set back years of gains made in efforts to eliminate neglected tropical diseases, a diverse group of 20 illnesses that disproportionately affect impoverished communities in tropical areas. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Neglected tropical diseases affect 1.7 billion people globally. 40% are in Africa, a continent that encompasses most of the 10 high-burden countries in the world. Over the past decade, the World Health Organization reports great progress has been made in the treatment of many of these life-threatening and debilitating diseases. It notes 42 countries around the world have eliminated at least one disease. However, Muele Chele Malichela, director of WHO's Department of Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases, says she fears a lot of this good work could be undone because of the negative impact of COVID-19. She says the pandemic has caused disruptions and delays in NTD services. She says mass treatment campaigns, surveys of affected areas, and the transport and delivery of medicines have been interrupted.
All the efforts that have been done to control these neglected tropical diseases, to bring about elimination in some of the countries, will be reversed if the focus is not kept, a good focus on surveillance, a good focus on continued interventions in some of the countries which are nearing elimination.
WHO reports guinea worm disease is on the cusp of eradication, with only 27 human cases reported in 6 African countries last year. In 1986, about 3.5 million human cases occurred annually in 21 countries in Africa and Asia. WHO says yaws, a chronic skin infection, is a disease that can be eradicated in the Indian subcontinent. Malichela cites several other success stories.
In terms of elimination of trachoma, we have Morocco, we have Ghana, and more recently we have Gambia. We have the elimination of lymphatic filariasis in Togo and in Malawi. In Yemen, which is, you know, outside Africa in the Middle East, they have eliminated lymphatic filariasis under very difficult conditions, but they've managed to do it. And that's, you know, very impressive feat.
At the end of January, WHO formally launched a new roadmap aimed at driving progress toward a world free of NTDs by 2030. Health officials consider the roadmap a key piece in ensuring countries build back better after COVID-19 by focusing on resilience and strengthening health systems. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa launched a new phase of its vaccination scheme this week, rolling out vaccines to the over 60 crowd. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The work begins in earnest now, with South Africa launching its second phase of vaccinations. Starting Monday, the vaccine will be rolled out to those over 60 years old. Health Ministers William Kiese said the nation expects to receive more than 1.3 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine by the end of the month.
It is, of course, with great pleasure that we, as members of the National Health Council, wish to give some details to the public about the mass vaccination campaign that will kick off tomorrow. We know that everyone has been very anxious to know what will happen tomorrow and how we will start to vaccinate our most vulnerable citizens and then move on to vaccinating the general population.
Those over 40 years of age will be eligible for vaccines in July, and everyone over the age of 18 will be eligible in November. The government hopes to have 40 million people, the estimated number to achieve herd immunity, vaccinated by February 2022. South Africa's vaccination campaign has had some major setbacks as the nation reversed course on plans to use the AstraZeneca vaccine after studies indicated it might not be fully effective against the variant of the virus that is dominant in South Africa. Sharon Flint is the nursing manager for 15 Johannesburg area elder care homes with about 4,500 residents. While she agreed that the nation's vaccine rollout took longer than she had hoped, she said she's glad it's ramping up now.
We thought this was only going to happen much, much later in the year. So to have started it today is very exciting. And we're in regular contact with the Department of Health because they're going to be actually coming to the homes and the care centers for Methodist homes and all the other homes in South Africa. And we've trained our nurses in vaccinating. So we've got our sites ready. We've got all the equipment we need ready. Now we're just waiting for the government to give us dates. And they have started this week, so it's very, very exciting.
She said it has been a tough year for her residents. Some have succumbed to the virus. She declined to give numbers. And the rest have struggled because of restrictions that keep them from seeing their loved ones in person. Flint is in that situation herself. Her 92-year-old mother is in a care facility. We asked her what her plan is once her mother is fully vaccinated.
I'm going to take her out for breakfast. She can have chocolate for breakfast if she wants to. She can do whatever she likes. Just to put my arms around her and hug her. So I think it's going to be such a celebration.
That scene is likely to be repeated, with or without the chocolate, across the Rainbow Nation in coming months, as South Africa's elderly get this essential protection. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Kenya, Kenyan authorities say they will not be able to give a second dose of COVID-19 vaccines until June, due to a shortage of AstraZeneca orders from the crisis in India where they are produced. Kenya has vaccinated less than 1 million of its more than 35 million people since March. But the Ministry of Health says efforts are underway to acquire millions of doses. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
36-year-old Wilkis Ivana helped her elderly father get vaccinated from COVID-19 in March. And now she's worried for his health.
Now it is May and there's no the second vaccination. So we are wondering, for how long are we going to wait? And the government promised that it's going to give out the second phase of the vaccination. I'm really worried because from my understanding, until you get the second dose of the vaccine, that's where you'll be fully safe.
Kenya began vaccinating its population in March after getting 1 million doses of AstraZeneca vaccines from India. So far in Kenya, 950,000 people have received a jab that gives them protection from the coronavirus. Kenya was supposed to begin its second phase of vaccination in May, but India, which is fighting a huge wave of COVID-19 cases, has banned the exportation of vaccines. The chairperson of Kenya's vaccine task force, Willis Akwale, says the lack of doses has stopped the vaccination process.
Kenya expected to have got shipments in April and May. We got information that these were delayed. We were told to expect in May. And even right now in May, there's no real concrete confirmation that we are going to get them. Therefore, for us in Kenya, with this uncertainty, we decided to shift the date of the second dose from 8 weeks to 12 weeks. The first people who got their first jabs at the beginning of March will now be due for their second dose the first week of June. So we remain hopeful that COVAX will be in a position to deliver some doses.
23-year-old Grace Kamau, a Nairobi resident, failed to get a coronavirus vaccine for herself and her 50-year-old mother.
So the only way I can also get vaccine if I do it privately.
She says, I was informed I will get the vaccine if I do it at a private hospital. The private hospital was charging between 7,000 to 10,000 Kenya shillings. Kamau says, coming from an informal settlement and you tell me to bring 7,000 to 10,000 and that's for one person's dose, it is hard, I don't have that money. Akwale told Kenyans not to panic.
The future is good. We only have this period of May and June and maybe part of early July that we may have a challenge. We want to vaccinate more people. We want to ensure that all adult Kenyans are vaccinated by end of next June. That is really our target. And we are putting systems and structures in place to ensure that immediately that steady supply of vaccines starts coming through, then we will do very intense mass vaccinations of Kenyans.
Last week, Kenyan Health Minister Mutahi Kagwe said the government has ordered 30 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So far, Kenya has recorded 113,000 COVID-19 cases and about 3,000 deaths. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We still keep you in Nairobi with the song New Sudan by Musa Juma. We've been listening to Musa Juma with the song New Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Karangotiyo matek sana kafika, zimbeo kedo malich sana kafika, kelijo kedo matek sana kafika, acholi koda sande kinupidi, shiluku koda madigiti kalukutu, kanyanyali da Joseph Lako. General Joseph Lako.
Oscar. Toke de pili sudani mami lango ele. Kwitore all personalities, Southern region. Toke de pili sudani mami lango ele. Kwitore all personalities, Southern region.
Sana Hasani Kamati Oma Texana Wakili Peter Tioma Texana Lukutu Agnesi Tioma Texana Albino Olivia Tioma Texana Anyango Kedo Malin Sana Africa Anyanyalita Joseph Lako. General Joseph Lako.
Nebet. Joke de pi sudani mami lamboge. Bargasel personalities, Southern region. Joke de pi sudani mami lamboge. Bargasel personalities, Southern region.
Ngeliaba,
Osuruti amatek sana William nyoti amatek sana Mokweye Joniti amatek sana Salvae Kirti amatek sana Macharoti amatek sana Africa Anyanyali da Joseph Lako Generali Joseph.